Welcome to Dilithium Recrystallized. How you doing, Tara?
Hey, I'm good. You know, another day in paradise. How you doing?
Yeah. I'm a little sick today.
That sucks, man.
Yeah. I'm going to try to bring it anyway. I'm going to do my best.
Okay.
But I'm sorry if I might sound a little down. I'm feeling a little under the weather.
Aw.
But yeah, one of the things that we didn't go over last week that I wanted to touch on was the new uniforms in season 3.
Yeah.
I guess for the first 2 years, the cast complained because they were in these spandex suits that were constantly pulling them down and making them hunch over, and they'd have to fight it. So finally, for the third season, they got cotton ones, I guess, or maybe a cotton blend. I don't know. I don't know exactly what they are, but
most importantly, they got rid of the onesie, right?
Right. Now they're two-piece. But you can still see the extras in the background wearing the old uniforms, and you can tell them apart because they have, you know, if it's a blue uniform, they've got an extra blue stripe around the shoulders, and the new uniforms don't have that. The new uniforms have a collar, however, that the old uniforms didn't have, with whatever color on the collar, on the edge of the collar.
Wow, that's very observant.
I like the Star Trek uniforms. I just always have. I don't know why. I don't know what it is.
I do too. but I remember them. I remember similarly seeing interviews where they would complain about the uniform, and then they got the new ones that were cotton, so they were more comfortable. But because Gene Roddenberry says there's no
wrinkles in the future.
There's no wrinkles in the future. They are constantly being steam ironed. They would come up to them with this big old steam and just steam them to make sure there were no wrinkles. So yeah,
that's like Carrie Fisher going to George Lucas and being like, "Can I wear a bra?" And he's like, "There's no bras in the future."
I remember that interview too, and she was like, he said it with such conviction, you know, looking back on it, I was like, what the hell do you mean? How do you know? You know, but at the time she was like, oh, okay, well, if there's not, then I guess there's not. Should we get into the episode?
Yeah, you want to get into the episode? So this is, what is this? This is season 3, episode 6, Booby Trap. And
what's the German title?
Oh, the German title. I wrote it down. Hold on. Mm-hmm. The German title is The Energy Trap.
Oh, well, I like that, but I also like it for the previous one. Like, this is, whose pick was it? Go ahead.
Oh, hold on.
Tell me.
I was going to look up the definition of a booby trap. What makes it a booby? And I forgot. I'm sorry. I failed the podcast. What's the difference between a trap and a booby trap? I don't know.
Maybe
a booby
mind,
trap set by someone? Is that what it is?
Is it what?
Is it possibly set by someone? Someone actually deliberately put this trap there, and that's what makes it a booby trap? Or is booby like a bounty thing? You know, like a riches? I don't know. That's kind of what I'm where my
that's
mind
where
goes.
That's what you're leaning. Okay, for me,
like
it's
pirates
ridiculous.
Booby trap. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, yeah, yeah. I mean, that's how Arr. That's what I think of is like Home Alone. You know, or. I think ridiculous.
Yeah.
So that's what makes it a booby.
Okay.
As opposed to just a trap. I don't know. Perhaps it, I mean, you have a point. It's the tactile making of the trap that will be sprung physically. Whereas if you lay a trap out of, you know, a web of lies or something to trap someone, there's no physical lie that was going to hit you in the face, you know, is probably
so, yeah,
something that
this yeah. episode, I mean, the structure of it sounds like it would be my pick, right? Because I like the Mysteries Were Stranded episodes. But no, I actually went back. I looked at your list, your original list, and in your handwriting, it is very much on there. And it's not on my list.
All right. I can't remember why. And I was super disappointed in my own pick, that being the case, because I watched the one after it. And I'm like, you know what? I wonder if I accidentally wrote the wrong one, because the one after it I really liked. And this one, I did not care for it. So, yeah. I mean,
possibly.
I am a big fan of Geordi LaForge. And in this episode and the following episode, he features very strongly. So that could have been the reason, or I could have mistaken the you know, I wrote down the wrong one. That's possible too. I'm not above mistakes.
So the The general plot of this one is we find a ship that's like thousands of years old, and everybody's dead, and they were trapped, and now we're trapped, and we got to get out. Is that pretty much? Oh, wait. Sorry. They're trapped. We're trapped. Geordi kind of makes up a holodeck simulation to try to get us out of the booby trap. Is that kind of the general idea of the episode?
That's about what it is. That's
okay.
All right. So we start at the opening scene?
Sure. And this is probably the very best part of the episode.
So you don't open with no captain's log or no view of the spaceship. No. We're opening on the holodeck. So we're on a sandy beach at sunset, and it's beautiful. And Geordi's got this girl next to him, and he is macking hard. He's offering her some cocoa no-no, you know, a little tropical drink there. And then he's like, oh, wait, I almost forgot. Here's my Hungarian pirate man playing a violin. And he's, you know, he's just coming around. And this girl is not into it. She is not feeling any of this. And he is laying on the Mac. You know what I mean? Like, he is putting down his best game. And the Hungarian pirate, now he's later referred to as the gypsy violinist. But when I looked at the closed captioning, is this he's playing a Hungarian rhapsody. So, on the violin. Yeah, closed caption helps out.
Well, he has his community theater pirate costume on, so.
Yeah, damn right. As he should.
As he should, right. So, as all violinists should, really.
Yeah. So Geordi basically secures himself in the friend zone pretty hard. She's not feeling it, and she's going to go. It's been a lovely program. I'm just not that into you. So, she takes off. And scene, right? Which, I have to say, this seems to be a recurring thing for Geordi's character, that he has a hard time finding love. He can't connect with anyone, and that's why, but he connects better with programs and the ship and engineering better than he does with actual people. So his best friend is Data, who is also a machine. He ends up befriending the Borg, who is also a machine. He's often portrayed this way, but I find the actual actor to be not only good looking, but also quite charming, you know? So it almost
got charisma.
He does. Yeah. So I know that they keep this theme going for his character, but I never saw it. But anyway, okay. So now we're in 10 forward, and Wesley is playing Data in 3-dimensional chess. Now, if you feel like you need an ego blow, that's exactly what you need to go do. If you need to feel bad about yourself, you need to challenge Data to some 3-dimensional chess. They're in 10 forward, so they have this beautiful window behind them, and there's an we're clearly sailing through an asteroid belt. And Wes is saying, oh, well, this isn't, you know, it's not an asteroid, but this is the final battle. This is where the final battle happened, right? And when Aurelius 9 was destroyed, and Data's like, yeah, this is it. This is the place. So it's not so much an asteroid. Well, it is, I guess they are asteroids now, but it's the remnants of a destroyed planet. But then Geordi comes in, and Wes is like, here we go. Geordi's date is a failure. He planned that for weeks. And it's like, oh man, this is salt in the wound. Just his character just cannot.
He was working on that that program for weeks, they say.
Yeah. Salt in the wound. He asked that girl out weeks ago, or he started working on the program, and then he asked her out, and it was utter failure. So Geordi's having a hard time. It's a bad day.
And Tara's going the whole time, why didn't she stay?
I know. I would have stayed. I would have asked for another cup of Coco Loco and told him to tell the pirate man to go down the beach a bit.
Alexa, volume down.
Yeah, exactly.
Never mind.
Gypsy violinist. Take it down a notch. So the scene keeps moving forward. We clearly had time and space, and we were going to do something different than just be on the ship. This is artistic direction here, because neither of those scenes further the plot along in any way. So, well, I mean, maybe not in any way, but very vaguely. So we're on the bridge, and we get a signal coming out of this, because we're here to kind of check out our chart. We're here to chart the battle between the Menthars and the Promillions. So somebody had menthol cigarettes on their table when they came up with this. Anyway, the Menthars and the Promillions who fought to their mutual extinction. But we're getting this ancient interplanetary code signal, and we don't know the source of the signal. Is some kind of ship, maybe? A Promillion battlecruiser? Whoa! It's over 1,000 years old, and it's a 1,000-year-old cry for help. No way. So we gotta go check this out. Now, Riker wants Worf to run some security sweeps first, but the captain's like, uh-uh, it's captain's prerogative. This one's mine. I'm going there immediately. The captain explains, number one, haven't you ever dreamed of climbing into the bottle? He's like,
I do that every night.
If I need to climb into a bottle, I tend not to talk about it with my boss.
That's right.
In fact, I hit the sauce this morning with my coffee, but we're not going to discuss that.
No, Riker, ship in a bottle. Come on.
Yeah, exactly. And he's like, in the last episode, I had to climb uphill with a fireman carrying some dude on my back, so I hit the bottle quite frequently. Anyway, he's talking about model ships. But apparently, in the future, it's not just ancient frigates, you know, that roam the seas. It's model airships can be a single engine prop plane. They can be model starships. I guess the captain was big into the model ships. The captain's like, seriously, Riker, you never once built a model ship in a bottle? And Riker's like, no. And they both look at Worf, and Worf's like, I did not play with toys.
Very awesome scene.
Yeah, which is an announcement like that, that's very loud and very affirmative, means that dude played with dolls. And not just any dolls, like baby dolls.
You know what? I mean? Like,
yeah, absolutely.
That's where your brain went?
No.
That's exactly where my brain went. If you got to announce to everybody that you never once touched a toy, is because you were touching toys that you felt are ashamed of. That's why. You don't make a broad statement like that.
No.
What did he play with? He was raised by humans. Come on, you tell me he didn't never touch a toy. Uh-huh.
But then next, Data says, I was never a boy. Which was awesome.
That's right, yeah. It's not part of my history, so. And O'Brien's like, oh, no. So then he goes, well, wait a second. Just go back to, like, Worf didn't play with toys. They're constantly saying that Geordi can't get it to work with a woman. Meanwhile, Worf has a number of partners and ends up for quite a while with Troi. And if you're talking about charm and personality, I mean, of the two.
Okay.
But, I mean, obviously, like, Michael Dornan does a good job. Worf's character is written that way. But of the two characters. Anyway. So he leaves, and O'Brien's like, I did. I played with, you know, model ships. And Riker's like, really? I did.
And you know what I thought?
What?
I was like, this guy is sucking up for a promotion.
Which is exactly what Riker looked at. It didn't occur to me that. I just figured this kid did.
He's I played with model shit. I played with dolls. I played with whatever you want. As long as I can get that promotion.
Captain, did you play with your shoelaces? I played with my shoelaces.
That's right.
That is not what occurred to me. I assumed they were both British because O'Brien is Irish and Jean-Luc is, well, perhaps he's French, but very also British. I don't know why they didn't just make his character British. They hired a British guy anyway. They could have hired a French actor who would have had a French accent. I wonder why it was important for them that Jean-Luc is very French.
I don't know. Somebody had a hard-on for France.
I know, seriously. Well, who doesn't? You know, until you get here. And then you go, well. So the team beams over, and immediately there's a small power drain. But nobody notices. It's fine. And there's corpses. And the corpses on this ship are at their post. And Worf is like, that's admirable. They all died at their post. And the captain is just giddy happy. He's just in his element. He's like, this is amazing. This is, you know, in a way better, you know.
If I can interrupt version. For a second.
Yes, please do. Yeah.
My wife watched this episode with me, and she almost never watches the episodes with me. Her first comment was, couldn't they have made that place look a little older? Couldn't they have done something to make it look older? I'm like, I don't know. I guess they did the best they could.
Well, it's a starship, and it was preserved in time. There was no oxygen in there.
Yeah.
So there wouldn't be decay in the way that you would expect it to be. And there wouldn't be dust because the people died pretty quickly. I mean, the radiation killed them in 26 minutes, and there they sat in their preserved state, mummifying over the years. But yeah, I guess I don't know.
It's okay. You don't have to defend the episode.
Okay. So back in 10 forward, Geordi's doing some drinking. And Guinan's like, you know, how's it going? And he's like, man, what is it? What do you like in a man? And she's like, I like bald men. And you're going, oh, I see something happening with Picard. But that never did go down. She never does. It never. But she says, I don't know, maybe a bald man was nice to me once, but I like him bald. She says, you're trying too hard. Basically, if you just relax, he's like, you know, then everything will be fine. So suddenly we're having more and more power issues. And back on board the 1,000-year-old ship, we find this USB coil that has all this information on it. And the captain of the ship, not our captain, not Picard, but the captain of the 1,000-year-old ship claims total responsibility for the death of the crew and the inevitable failure of whatever is going on with them. The cool thing about Star Trek is that every race in the universe speaks English.
Yeah.
Just like the Proto-Vulcans. We never mentioned that. The Proto-Vulcans just all spoke English.
That was one of those things that I really picked up on this episode. I'm like, this happened 1,000 years. These people died 1,000 years ago.
Yeah.
A completely alien race that probably had no contact with humans.
Yeah.
And yet, okay, you can chalk it up to, sure, Universal Translator translated it in their heads, I guess. But, like, their lips moving.
Yeah.
At exactly what English lips would do? I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, it made me think more about the Proto-Vulcan episode because have you ever tried to explain a complex subject in another language? You know, it's just not happening. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, unless you're fluent or you were raised speaking those languages, it's, oh my gosh, nuance, it just goes out the window. Anyway, so the captain returns to the ship and he is just glowing and everyone notices and everyone's happy for him. And then they're suddenly bombarded by radiation. And there's energy loss.
Might be the first time we've ever seen the captain happy.
Yeah. Well, perhaps. I don't know. I can't remember the order of all the episodes. But every time he's on some kind of archaeological moment or dealing with history, he's glowing. Mm. It's adorable. So the energy loss keeps increasing and the engines are not responding. And he says to Geordi, come on, man, get us out of here. And Geordi's like, Commander, we should be going like a bat out of hell. And now we suddenly realize we're in 1,000-year-old booby trap. So, boom. So we go to the ready room, because that's where we go when we have to discuss things, because we can't discuss it.
We need to pay for this room.
On the ship. Exactly. Because all the people that were on the bridge usually also end up in the discussion. But we can't discuss it out there, because that's not where we discuss things.
Well, Wesley might hear it.
That's right.
We can't have that.
Shut up, Wesley. although I don't hate Will Wheaton or Wesley's character, but yeah, they say all the time. Okay, so in the ready room, there's a radiation field. There's energy loss. What is going on? We're going to lose the shields in 3 hours, Captain. Oh, crap. Without the shields, we're all going to die of radiation poisoning within 30 minutes. Riker and Data want to return to the 1,000-year-old ship to look for clues. Geordi says, you know, well, we got to deal with the ship's power supply. And the captain basically says, Geordi, the ship's power supply is your problem. So Geordi's having a shit day. So he goes back to the engineering where he starts researching the problem. And he stumbles upon, in his research, a Dr. L. Brahms, a junior officer who basically wrote the book on propulsion. And she postulates that dilithium crystals could be restructured into a lattice formation, giving us another way of getting energy out of them. So Geordi decides to take this problem, not to Data, not to any other colleagues in the room, but to the fucking holodeck, because that's where I take my life or death problems, to the holodeck to be by myself.
you think for a minute that, like, you know, he's going to construct the warp core in the holodeck and, mm-hmm. and see what mm-hmm. he can take apart mm-hmm. and change or whatever. But no.
That's not what he does. He creates the building station on Mars where they built the engine. He turns Leah into a person standing next to him, or she is holographically displayed in front of him.
Apparently by accident, though.
Yeah. Because he says, can you make Leah more real? Or I don't remember what he asked, but and he's like, and he turns around and there she's standing there, and he goes, "Did I ask you to make her?" And he's like, "You asked me to make her clear or something. To clarify her or whatever." So that's what I did. And he's like, "All right, well, that's fine."
Yeah, he turns around and she's a hottie.
Yeah. you know, and his day is improving because it's always nice to have a hottie. You turn around, a hottie's behind you. You never know.
I mean, when you're shot down by your friend on a date, the next best thing is in the holodeck, right?
Well, you know what? I thought it was a little bit cliche for what the holodeck is used for, that she is super coming on to him. And I'm like, you know what? The computer gets asked this all the time. Can you make me a program that's into me?
I know I'm skipping ahead a little bit, but the kiss in the end, I thought, who programmed the computer to kiss him or to kiss him back or at all?
Yeah.
Is Leah Brahm so promiscuous that it's just known? And that's why this information is in the computer?
I thought the same thing. Or she gives him a back rub.
Yeah.
She starts massaging his shoulders. It's like, in what universe is the computer going to be like, "I need to touch this person now"? Unless the computer is habitually asked.
Yes.
To make holographic images that touch
Or there's
you.
A scene missing where he says, "Hey, computer, can you combine my program XB95 with this Leah Brahm's program?"
Or with Barclay's program, you know?
Right.
Somebody who's in here all the time.
We haven't met Barclay yet. We haven't had a Barclay episode. I'm not sure when he actually appears.
I don't know. I don't even know if we did end up using him, if we did pick him. So he asked the computer basically that because she sounds like a robot and it's irritating him that this pretty girl is in front of him and she has no personality, to just extrapolate from her debates that have been recorded and her personal logs, which she's not allowed to have access to, which is fair. Any information that she's ever said or done, to extrapolate and make her. And then Geordi starts crushing, right? So we've already kind of touched on that. So now we're down to 26 minutes of radiation time when the shields fail because it's getting worse. So we're like, okay, shut out the lights, shut out everything. And then the holodeck goes. And Geordi's like, "But I'm still working on this program." And he's like, "All right, give him back his program."
"We can't have lights." Shit.
Yeah, "We can't have lights, but Geordi can have his back massage."
I was just about there.
No. Oh, man. So he's like, "In 1 hour, you're going to give me your best guess." He's like, "You got it." So he goes back in there and he starts working with her. And they're working calculations and they're working and they're doing the best they can. And she starts rubbing his shoulders. And he's like, "Don't do that." And she's like, "Oh, I thought it would feel good." He's like, "Yeah, I don't want to feel good right now."
Yeah, but it's just wasted energy. And we need that energy.
Exactly. And then, boom, Captain walks in and catches him. And he's all like, and because remember, he was like, "Oh, our team is all smiles down here." And there was no smiles because she hadn't had her personality yet. It was just him. Anyway, so he's like, "This is a holographic image of Dr. Leah Brahms. And I have been working with the hologram." Yeah. So he tried to explain what he's doing. And the captain's like, "Uh-huh. Uh-huh." And the captain just leaves. So the captain goes to the ready room and is sitting in the dark because essentially his chief engineer is by himself in the holodeck with some girl, some holographic chick. And I'm pretty sure in the captain's mind, this is the end. We were down to our last hour and I just caught my chief engineer not doing what he was supposed to do. So he starts waxing nostalgic about model ships and bottles. Anyway, we are now in make it or break it time. It's 26 minutes to fatal exposure. We're no longer a few hours away. This is it. We have no shields. And in 26 minutes, we're all going to die no matter what happens.
My wife said, this is a very intense episode. You really feel the situation. That was her notes.
Right on. No, I appreciate her feedback, especially when it's positive. I'm glad she got into it.
She did. Yeah, I was surprised because it seemed like she wasn't at the beginning, especially when she commented about the spaceship.
That's a fair criticism. Because they probably did just make it special. So it was new. Geordi has two options. Either he can hand it over to the computer, which is what Leah wants, because she's the computer. So she wants him to give it to her and she'll make all the calculations. Or Geordi says, you know what? Let's just shut it all off. We'll make a big burst of impulse engine and just coast out of here without any energy output at all. So they're like, all right, well, let's do that. Now, I don't want to beat a dead horse, but there's a lot of similarities with this one and the finger trap episode with the Ferengi.
Yeah.
We got to shut everything down because it's sucking energy out. And sure. So your impulse is to put more energy in, and that's only the worst thing you can do. So anyway, all right, so we shut it all down. We big burst of impulse power, and the captain's like, Wesley, I need you to get the hell up off my chair. So captain takes the helm. He's like, it's my turn to be a part of this episode because I haven't had anything to do but sit in the dark and ponder model freaking ships. So I'll be taking the wheel. So he needs to stay relevant. So he sits down.
Well, you would think they'd hand it over to the computer because the computer can make those, you know, tiny precision movements.
Sure.
But no, it's up to the captain's instincts.
Right. Exactly. Or Riker, who is considered the best pilot in all of Starfleet. On several occasions, they reference that.
Or Data.
Or Data. Yeah. But it turns out Data's not any good at it because Data's like, we are losing speed. The gravity is slowing us down. And then Picard uses the gravity of this big old asteroid to slingshot around and move through the field. Yeah. They finally make their way out just by just barely making it through the asteroid. A little bit to the left, a little bit to the right. We're going to use the gravity of this one and the gravity of that one. And then boom, we're out. And we're like, oh, thank God. And Picard's like, Riker, why don't you make sure nobody falls in that same trap again? Yeah. And Riker's like, blow that shit up. That's right. And yeah, Geordi's basically like, technology doesn't solve everything. And he kisses his hologram back in the holodeck. And that's really weird. And then he shuts it off. And he actually never goes back. Because
that we know of.
You find out later. Yeah, well, no. You find out later that she comes back. The actual Leah Brahms comes to the ship one day.
I was just about to get into this. In season 4, episode 16, Galaxy's Child, she comes back, the real Leah Brahms, and she is a bee.
Yeah, she is not
at all
charming.
She is not a nice person.
Or soft or flirty the way she was on the holodeck. She ain't none of those things.
Like the hologram. And this was interesting, I found, because let's say, you know, the computer took all of your social media and all your posts and stuff of how happy you are and how great your life is and rolled it into one hologram. And that hologram is happy and flirty and whatever. But in reality, the computer didn't see all your negative opinions.
Your shitty moments, yeah.
Right.
When you were crappy to your spouse. That.
So, I really felt how realistic that is.
Oh, that's really fair, actually, now that you say it. Because I didn't think about it that way. In my mind, I was like, well, why the hell did they make this little simpering, you know, love interest when they should have made her a strong, badass bitch? But that's not what they did. So yeah. And moreover, in that episode that you're talking about in season 4, she's not even single. She's been married. She's been married for years. She comes aboard and he's like, I'm going to make this work. And he meets her and she is not a nice person. And she's married. And then she finds his freaking program.
His computer. Okay. We can completely spoil that episode because it's not on either of our lists.
Nope. But he does say, to her, if I remember correctly, he says to her, like, it's not like I went back and visited her. Like, it's not like we were a thing. It was a one-time program. It helped save the ship. It's all it was.
He says that. Yeah, sure.
So you can safely assume, or you can safely know, that he didn't, he's not going to go back and date the holodeck.
Well, this is where it's super interesting, because she finds the holographic program of herself and is super upset about it, as one would be, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Now,
I felt her.
Where do you draw that line? If I have all the information of someone and I can make a holographic representation of that person,
good question.
Should I be allowed to do that? And what am I allowed to do with this avatar of another person? You know?
True. Though technically it's not an avatar. Simply a holographic representation, because for an avatar, you would have to be controlling it.
Oh, really?
Yourself. Okay. Yeah.
I was under the impression that an avatar was just a representation. Digital representation.
Yeah, digital. But no, because you have to be behind it. So your avatar, when you're playing a video game, right? You know what I mean?
Okay.
And like the avatar in the movie, he was linked to it. This is simply a fantasy. Had it been an avatar, that would have been more ethically sound. But not us. That's an excellent question. At what point can you take someone else's image and create a fantasy around it? In the physical,
without their consent.
Yeah, in the physical holographic world. But also at the same time, like, you ever have somebody making fantasies about you? You know what I mean? In their own mind, you know? Like high school or whatever.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
You can't stop nobody from that. I mean, that's not ethically wrong. You just, imagination. And then the holodeck is then an extension of that imagination. But yeah, I mean, if he were to, like, get intimate with her and her image, that might, yeah, I think that'd be crossing ethical lines. I feel like the Orville, which is, I think, the closest current representation of Gene Roddenberry's original vision, does work a little bit more with the ethics of the holodeck, because that is not addressed in Gene Roddenberry's world. Essentially, the holodeck, what happens on the holodeck stays on the holodeck, and we don't ask about it, we don't talk about it. It's implied that stuff happens in there. And then when the cartoon, the Lower Decks, that's hilarious because they extrapolate much further than I would even want to go with it about what the holodeck is actually used for. It's essentially a pleasure den for the various cultures aboard the ship. The ethics of the holodeck is interesting. And they only touch on it very briefly when they create programs that become sentient. And then what rights do those sentient programs have when Moriarty becomes self-aware?
Yeah, I don't know if that episode is in our list or if it's already happened or not.
No, I don't think it's on our, I don't think it's in our list.
I think it already happened.
Yeah, I don't think it's on our list. But the point is, that's as far as they go with the ethics of the holodeck. They never get into what right do you have to use certain images and.
Yeah. But the holodeck opens up a whole can of worms, you know?
It does. And Lower Decks is hilarious. So if you're a big fan of Trek, I hope you've seen Lower Decks, the cartoon. And then, of course, the Orville.
I haven't seen it yet, but I'd like to.
No. You really haven't?
Eventually, I'll watch it.
Oh, my God.
I haven't seen Lower Decks
so
yet.
So good. And you're a big fan of Rick and Morty.
Yeah.
Although it's not nearly as raunchy as Rick and Morty. Oh, yeah. I highly recommend it, especially since we're doing this. I might rewatch it just because I enjoyed it that much.
Right on.
Things like, whose job is it to clean the holodeck? This is some nasty crap in there. Or the holodeck filters, you know? Because it has its own filters that's just full of nastiness. From various pleasure orgy parties. It's not me. In Lower Decks, in the cartoon, they get real explicit about what the holodeck is used for. And again, Gene Roddenberry and TNG doesn't do that. So, you know, and I saw this as a child. So I didn't really, you know, I didn't grow up and then extrapolate. So, but I guess other people have. So, it's really funny. So it's a good cartoon. Anyway, I think I might have picked Booby Trap because I thought it was the Finger Trap episode. There's so many similarities, and I don't feel like we've really touched on something very new. And the interpersonal relationships between them, while helped round out the characters, were not the main focus, and certainly not the reason why I would have picked this episode. And in the next one, Geordi reveals himself to be not only personable and friendly and charming and interesting, but also a badass. So not this simpering, lovesick guy who can't connect with another woman. Which is how he's portrayed, his character is portrayed in this one. In the next one, he's stuck on this planet and he needs to work with his enemy to get out of it. And he, because of the electric storms, he goes blind and the other guy can't use his legs. And
did you already watch together, it?
I full on did. And the two of them work on, why, is that the next one?
It could be.
It's not on the list, right?
No. What's the next one?
Okay. And so they have to work together to get off this planet, and it's really badass. And you don't see him as the simpering, you know, loser who can't make it with women.
Or the episode before this was, I think, actually better. It's
what was that one?
They beam down to a planet, and a mine goes off and kills this science officer and her
Marla
son.
Marla Astor. Yeah, I watched that one too.
Orphan.
Yeah, that was a good one too.
I think that would have been a good episode. I think maybe better than this one. I remember when I was going over the episodes, considering Booby Trap and, you know, the other one, Galaxy's Child. And I think I decided that there were just so many more interesting ones to pick.
Yeah,
I
mean, my bad.
I'm not upset that you picked this one. I mean, I didn't mind watching it. Yeah. And it was a little suspenseful, and you know, like my wife said, she enjoyed the suspense. So,
but it's certainly not one of our top picks. Probably shouldn't have been in the top picks. But
I mean, considering the other episodes that you skipped, I cannot believe that this is in your picks.
I swear I was confusing it with either the one before or the one after, because I also, you're right, I did watch both of those too. they were so much better than this one.
Fair enough. You ready for the next episode?
I'm ready. Tell me. Announce it. Get Let's hear it.
Pumped for the next episode. Season 3. My Season pick. Three.
Episode. Ooh.
Episode 11.
11.
The Hunted. Which I ooh, think this was the episode title that I thought Manhunt was going to be.
Okay. Interesting. I'm excited. Well, great. Well, thank you so much for joining us. And, you know.
Thanks, everyone.
I will. I'm sure the next pick will be much better.
I'm sorry. I'm all a little sick. So I might have been a little down.
You were great. What are you talking about?
Oh, thanks.
I liked your ethical question.
Can you say that again?
We'll talk to y'all later.
Bye.
Little brother's going to get some sleep.